Hello everyone, I'm George from Ireland. Welcome back to my channel, and I'm commenting what Mary Lou McDonald had to say on Good Morning Britain a week ago. It was on Bastille Day. Now, she's a Republican, so I wonder if that's why she wanted to blazon forth her views on that particular date. She's a president of Sinn Féin. Now, my viewers are not British may not realise that Sinn Féin is a political party in the United Kingdom and indeed the Republic of Ireland. In the Irish language, it means ourselves alone. As in, we're not the Welsh, we're not the Scots, we're not the English, Ireland only xenophobic, racist party, and was really a part of a terrorist movement for the better part of a century. But fortunately, it's not like that, it's mainstream, and okay, we could treat them like any other party. So, Good Morning Britain, she was speaking to Richard Madeley, one of the United Kingdom's best known morning television hosts. Anyway, she said that the Good Friday Agreement brought to an end a conflict that ran for centuries. Well, I mean, not really. That ran since 1969. Now, there's been conflict on and off in Ireland down the centuries, as there has in most countries, but it's not the same conflict. It's not the conflict that her political party started. Say, the 17th century, there was no active union. It wasn't about Ireland or Great Britain splitting away. Sometimes as the RU4 against King Charles I. So something is said, a sectarian conflict, 1690, who's King of Ireland? Is it James II? Is it William of Orange? It's not the same conflict. So she is lying. I don't think she's that ignorant. Sometimes a politician is just cretinous, but in her case, she's just mendacious. And then it was disappointing to see that her interviewer, who's a bit of an idiot himself, is so ignorant he didn't challenge her, saying, Ireland was partitioned down the barrel of a British gun. Well, lie. Okay, partition was agreed to even before the First World War by the Home Rule Party, who were represent the majority of Irish opinion, as a temporary measure. But these temporary measures have a habit of becoming permanent, partly because things changed in Southern Ireland. We're no longer going to be Home Rule within the United Kingdom. Was splitting from the United Kingdom and establishing the Irish Free State. So therefore, partition wasn't temporary, became permanent. Although Lloyd George did say, the Prime Minister said at the time, we would like to see whether Northern Ireland and Southern Ireland could agree to reunite. I remember the idea is Irish Free State, as we then were, because I'm from Cork, was a dominion of the British Empire. But that changed again when nationalism kept shifting the goalposts, kept breaking the deal. There are all these racists in Ireland, say perfidious Albion. Now, I shan't say perfidious Hibernia, because not to say that most of us are dishonest or whatever, but certainly, yeah, some politicians are. So partition was agreed to. It was agreed to by her party, Sinn Féin. Mary Lou McDonald's party agreed to it. Okay, so that was a Sinn Féin delegation went to London, and in Downing Street on the 6th of December, 1921, they signed an agreement for partition again. It was brought back to Dáil Éireann. That's the Irish Parliament in Dublin, and it was every single TD was a Sinn Féiner, and they voted for it, 64 to 57. Her party voted for it. There was an election, not a referendum, and it was carried by a high majority. About 75% of people voted for it in Southern Ireland. In Northern Ireland, it would have been perhaps even higher. So it was agreed to again and again and again. She's lying. And even when some of Northern Ireland was offered to the Irish Free State in 1925, the Irish government, our government, said no. And now, admittedly, would have had to cede a small amount of territory to the United Kingdom, but the totality, it would have been a net gain for Southern Ireland. Northern Ireland would have shrunk by about 2%. Two public offers in the 1940s to give the whole of Northern Ireland to ERA, and twice publicly rejected by Eamon de Valera, who was once leader of a party, Sinn Féin. Okay, he wasn't leader of Sinn Féin by the 40s, as in Fianna Fáil, who was our Taoiseach, latterly President of the Republic. Okay, she is lying and lying, and it's sickening. And then she says there was no democracy involved in partition. Well, there was, as I've just adumbrated. It was imposed on the island. It was not imposed to. It was agreed to. And as for guns, is her party was importing guns illegally, wanted guns from Germany, encouraging a German invasion in 1918, the German plot, 1916. The Easter Rising is not really Sinn Féin. I think a newspaper mislabeled it Sinn Féin, when I don't think any of the seven signatories of the Proclamation of the Republic were Sinn Féiners. It was sort of a lunatic fringe party. had only once contested a by-election, had a couple of local councillors, that it. She said, as for partition, the consequences were literally devastating. I mean, I don't think so. The population of Northern Ireland grew. Okay, Republic of Ireland shrank. I agree that us leaving the United Kingdom, that was devastating. Well, obviously we turned things around in the slowly growing in the 60s, but whose fault was partition? Nobody was talking about partition until Home Rule came up. Southern Ireland was not expelled from the United Kingdom. No unionists wanted to kick Southern Ireland out. Northern Ireland stayed where it was within the United Kingdom. She said that partition was deeply damaging to the relationship between Britain and Ireland. No, Sinn Féin was deeply damaging to relationship between Britain and Ireland. Sinn Féin started this conflict, supported criminal violence against the police, murdering Garda Síochána in the Republic of Ireland, and indeed soldiers in the Irish Army in the Republic of Ireland, carrying out bank robberies, drug dealing, murdering people they accused of being drug dealing, kidnappings. So they were really just appalling, torturing people, and so terrorizing people in the Republic of Ireland and indeed in Northern Ireland to murder police officers, soldiers, many civilians, carrying out over 200 sectarian murders, brutalizing people. And I know that they had some genuine supporters, setting off bombs against civilian targets in Great Britain, in shops, and so on. So they were terrorist organizations. Obviously, the United Kingdom was way too soft. Membership of the IRA or other terrorist organizations, the loyalist terrorist organizations, ought to have led to a life sentence without possibility of parole. So Irish unity makes sense. I agree. We had unity. Her party shattered it. No one was talking about partition until Home Rule became a serious possibility, or even more so, leaving the United Kingdom. So her party, they wanted partition, but they just wanted it a different place. They wanted the partition line drawn down the middle of the Irish Sea, rather than across Ireland. You can't get everything you want. She says partition makes no sense economically. Why? Since in economic terms, Northern Ireland's part of the European Union. I know it's part of the United Kingdom. We've had Brexit, but the deal was goods between Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland, no inspections. All the goods and services in Northern Ireland are in conformity with the European Union regulations. There's no need for it. So economically, you could say it already is part of the Republic, admittedly using a different currency. And of course, we wouldn't need to do that. Republic of Ireland, in the old days, we had the Irish pound, well, until 1971, and it was printed in different paper. That was the pound sterling with a one-for-one value, with going with the exchange rate set by London. So we didn't need to do that. Of course, the United Kingdom could adopt the euro, even though it's outside the European Union, just like countries like Montenegro have done so unilaterally. So Great Britain subsidizes Northern Ireland. So, Northern Ireland ought to be grateful. And obviously, some of that wealth trickles through to the Republic. She says there hasn't been an active conversation around preparing referendums. Well, whose fault is that then? Talk about it, Sinn Féin. I remember over 20 years ago, Sinn Féin saying this, trying to form an electoral pact with the SDLP, so begin the countdown to Northern Ireland, so blame themselves. And she says, what health the health service would look like, what the education system would look like. Okay, so Sinn Féin's had over 100 years to sort it out, so blame yourself. She said, Brexit is not the answer. Well, wait a second, it could be, Brexit is Brexit. She said, that's not the answer. The United Kingdom simply could have left without an agreement, and Nigel Farage advocated for that. I mean, I thought that was rash, but that was a possibility. Anyway, Brexit was a big boost for Sinn Féin. Before Brexit, the majority of Catholics in Northern Ireland wanted to remain part of the United Kingdom, even those who voted for the SDLP, and even 23% of those who voted for Sinn Féin. And obviously, not all Catholics are nationalists. You could be a Catholic Unionist, and I'm one of them, except from Cork. She used the expression the Dublin government. Now, nationalists usually find that demeaning rather than Irish government. I mean, I didn't mind it. She said the borders brought a financial and social cost. Well, what is the social cost? I don't understand. How can you not socialize across the border? People go back and forth all the time. And there's a sister living in the north and a brother living in the south and their friends on the other side of the border. You can live in one and work in the other and shop in one and go to the GP in the other. It's preposterous. No, there isn't a social cost. I mean, if there is one, again, it's her party's fault. Anyway, what she said to Sinn Féin is, you are British in a partitioned Ireland, you'll be British in a united Ireland. This is not an attempt to take away your identity. Well, actually, Sinn Féin does try and take that away and tell them that they're not British, that they're Irish, and this is incompatible with being British, which is preposterous. I am British precisely because I'm Irish. They're entirely compatible. There doesn't need to be any contradiction whatsoever. And if they accept being British, why do they blow up statues of generals in the British Army? Why were they against the British Army parading in Northern Ireland, part of the United Kingdom? Why do they want to rename places? Why are they so vehemently saying that they're not British? No one's trying to deny you Irish, you know. So the things in the United Kingdom which have Irish in the name, even like military regiments, Irish regiments of the British Army would have Irish wolfhounds, Irish round towers, guys playing the Irish pipes or wearing an Irish kilt. No attempt to suppress our Irish identity whatsoever, indeed to promote it and celebrate it. And why are they against orange marches or marches of the Apprentice Boys or other organizations flying the Union flag? If they're really comfortable with British identity, they would do everything to promote this. Or, St. Patrick's Day parades, people playing carrying the Irish tricolour, some would carry the Scots saltire. I don't object to that. Why not have people flying the British flag as well? Because that's the identity of some people in Ireland. I remember the 90s when the Irish Gays and Lesbians Associations were not allowed to march in various St. Patrick's Day parades in the USA. And now they're very politically correct on the gay issue, Gerard Adams, but he wouldn't take a stand on that one. She said the North is not economically viable as a territory. Well, sure, which is why it's in the United Kingdom. Nobody wanted to be independent. Anyway, she said it's cut off from its natural social, political, and economic hinterland. Well, it's not cut off. As I say, economically, it's absolutely connected. Socially, likewise, politically, well, there is that Council of Ireland. But anyway, she calls this partition Ireland as a whole. Well, Southern Ireland, we're cut off from our natural social and political economic hinterland, which is the British Isles, which is Great Britain, this archipelago. She said the Irish economy has grown up to six times since 1998. Yeah, and why didn't it grow so fast beforehand? Largely because of Sinn Féin's terrorism, because of blowing up shops and offices and kidnapping people and bank robberies and all the extra money that had to be spent on security. So it's because of her murderous movement that we had severe economic difficulties. It was hard to attract investment, and indeed foreign businessmen who tried to employ people got kidnapped by her criminal gang. So she said Irish people had to fight for our freedom. I suppose she's right against the IRA, which has taken away our right to expression, trying to intimidate. I still get death threats, murdering people for having a different view, trying to attack polling stations and people are trying to vote, murdering people for belonging to different political parties, taking away free expression in terms of parades and so forth. So Sinn Féin was a mortal threat to our freedom. We were free in the United Kingdom. You could do what you want, go what you want, say what you want, buy and sell what you want, and so on. You could leave the country, you could stay in the country, set up a political party, even a party aiming at the dissolution of the United Kingdom. In many countries, that'd be a crime to this day. So she said the reality is partition is not sustainable. Well, it is, and it is being sustained. They've been saying this for over 100 years. Now, partition might come to an end, but it's still sustainable. So she says, she talked about Michelle O'Neill, her colleague in Sinn Féin, being First Minister of Northern Ireland. She said Northern Ireland was designed, specifically engineered to maintain a perpetual unionist majority. Well, it was the border was drawn so that people got what they wanted, so that as many unionists as possible got to stay within the United Kingdom without taking in too many nationalists who didn't want to be part of it. What's wrong with that? Would you prefer it was even bigger, Northern Ireland? I don't think so. So don't complain about a border which is drawn to try to make sure that nationalists get to be in the state that they want to be in. She said war is a failure of politics. Well, it wasn't a war. It was a terrorist campaign by loyalist terrorists and Sinn Féin's IRA. But yes, Sinn Féin and the Constitutional National Parties, they did fail politically. They didn't persuade unionists to leave the United Kingdom and Republic of Ireland. We're rather a basket case of the 90s, but now obviously we're highly successful, partly because we're a freer country with greater freedom of expression and so on. We're a more secular country. We're an extremely prosperous country, and that's why joining the Republic is more attractive than ever before. She said peace requires honesty and integrity. Yeah, unlike what she's saying, she's totally dishonest and completely lacking in integrity, and just like her icon, Gerard Adams, who's always lying and claiming that he was never in the IRA. So he says we had to live with the myth that conflict erupted in the north for no good reason. There was a good reason, I suppose, and that was the IRA's hatred of democracy, their desire to tyrannize people, to oppress, to impose their beliefs on everybody else, their sectarian and racist agenda, and is also intra-punitive, is partly self-hatred of the fact that in Ireland almost all of us are a little bit English or Welsh or Scots or even two or three of those things, because they're in denial about that, because this preposterous proposition that Irish and British are necessarily opposed to each other, are antonyms, are mutually exclusive. Anyway, she said, the IRA was always seeking to generate conflict again. They lost in the border campaign, declared a ceasefire in 1962, seeking to exploit opportunities. And obviously, the civil rights movement, the IRA getting involved in that, seeking to turn peaceful protest into conflict. And indeed, they started that conflict. And of course, I blame loyalist terrorists as well. She said the reason was discrimination. Now, there's always some discrimination somewhere. Prefer that there wasn't. It's a worldwide problem. But the idea that this is somehow justificatory of murder is outrageous. Travellers who discriminate in the Republic of Ireland, should they have murdered people? How many guards should they have murdered? I'm told women are discriminated against all the time. They're the majority of the population. So how many people should they have murdered? You know, we're told that, I don't know, that gay people are discriminated against. They didn't murder anyone because of this, or that transsexual people discriminated against. They didn't murder anybody because of this. She said there's a virtual apartheid state, which is an absolute lie, is a stinking, disgraceful, revolting lie. There was nothing remotely approaching apartheid in Northern Ireland. There were no signs saying Catholics have to sit here and Protestants have to sit there. People could go to whichever school they wanted to. And yes, it's true that Catholics mostly went to Catholic schools, and the majority of schools did not have a religious affiliation. Most children there might be Protestant, but it wasn't actually a Protestant school. Didn't most of them didn't have any connection to the Church of Ireland, Presbyterian Church, and so on. Okay, so it's not the case you could live in any street you wanted to, and it's true that people tended to live apart, but that wasn't by the law of the land. You could go as a Catholic, the so-called discriminated against group of people. We could go to any park you wanted to, any swimming pool you wanted to, I don't know, any library, any restaurant, any hotel, anywhere in the bus or the train. So it's a total lie to claim that this was an apartheid state. People could get married to each other. You could change from one religious denomination to another. The Ulster Unionist Party, which was running Northern Ireland, right, they allowed Catholics to join, and Catholics indeed were elected to public office in the Ulster Unionist Party, although it's not many. All professions were open to Catholics. So it is not true at all. Catholics from the Republic of Ireland moving in, okay, to get work, denied employment opportunities, which is why Catholics moved there for employment. Are you out of your mind? When Italians, 99% of whom were Catholic, moved to Northern Ireland precisely to get work. So she is lying. Catholics could join the police, Royal Ulster Constabulary, promoted to all ranks, even be chief constable in the 70s, as Sir Jamie Flanagan was. Join the army, be promoted to the highest rank, and she said, Irish people living in Ireland were told they're second class. No, they weren't. Whoever said that? Show me one quotation. Okay, now there was some sectarianism. There were some knuckle-dragging loyalist bigots. That's true. I'm not saying all loyalists were bad like that, but they might dislike Catholics, but I don't know any of them said that we were second class. Denied access to housing. Okay, well, council housing was limited. And they people this was given out to people, but sometimes on the basis of political favoritism. And you know, so 95% of Protestants were unionists of some shape or form, and a lower percentage of Catholics were nationalists. So, but it seems to be, and nationalist councils discriminated against Protestants, and unionist councils discriminated against Catholics. Obviously, the severity of this mustn't be exaggerated. So it's to do with, but it's not you couldn't have housing, but might less likely to get council housing, denied employment opportunities. I don't know of any employer which refused to employ Catholics, but okay, disproportionately few Catholics would work in certain businesses. It might be where they are located. It might be an overwhelmingly Protestant town. Catholics, you ha how many people applied? How many Catholics applied to this company? So if we look at that, we might say, the fact that not many Catholics work for a certain company wouldn't be surprising. They might dislike it. And some people who worked there were members of the Orange Order or something like that. Let's treat each other equally and respect each other's human rights, which is exactly what she's not doing when she said Northern Ireland's not a country, because some people say it is a country. So her movement was the biggest human rights abuser in Ireland. And as for referenda, the status quo usually wins, unless there's a clear majority for the proponents of change. And I'm saying like the 60% plus, then the status quo usually wins. Brexit is very much an exception. So she is a detestable lying fiend. Unfortunately, she's quite popular. And obviously, she leads the biggest party in the Republic. They may win next time, but what goes up must come down. Sinn Féin's been on the high for quite a long time. If they go down, that might drag down the whole nationalist agenda. There is a solution to partition, dissolve the Republic, rejoin the United Kingdom, but I shan't bate my breath for that happening.